This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Most of my childhood was spent in the same 20 square miles of forest, somewhere in the Appalachian wilderness. I lived there with my mom in this cabin she claims to have built with her own two hands. I believed her for a while, though now I'm fairly certain she just found an abandoned cabin and fixed it up as best she could. It was so cold in the winter, and the small fires we managed to produce in the fireplace did little to warm the area. Most winter nights were spent with us cuddled under the same blanket. During the summers, the cabin was so humid that you could see the wood sweating. Often, we'd opt for sleeping outside on summer nights, despite the clouds of mosquitoes that the makeshift netting my mom made from old fabric did little to quell. The multitude of bug bites was preferable to waking up dehydrated from sweat, though. Our days back then were mostly spent with my mom hunting for small animals to cook and eat while I gathered firewood and picked berries. On rare occasions, we would take breaks and spend the day singing songs or reading from the handful of books she had. However, we needed to survive, and that meant working hard to ensure we had food and fresh water. My mask made foraging more difficult than it should have been. I constantly had to pull at the white cotton sheet to fit the eye holes over my eyes, and would often become drenched in sweat within an hour. The only time I ever took off my mask was when my mom bathed me. I would often try to catch my reflection in the water, but it was never clean enough. I wondered if she'd ever seen my face. She would have had to have seen it the day I was born, right? I learned early on not to ask my mom questions that involved the masks or my face. The only answer I ever received was that if I took off my mask in front of someone, something bad would happen. If I pushed any further, she would say, "I'm your mother, and you should trust that I know what's best." And I did. For a long time. My mother was my whole world, and I loved her as much as a boy could. We spent most of our time together, and I have mostly happy memories of her. Of course, there are bad memories sprinkled in there, with some being downright horrible. I recall once when I was somewhere between 4 and 6. I was playing outside in our garden. Mom was on the other side of the yard doing laundry while I hopped through the soft dirt, stepping on any pests I saw. Looking at their guts on the underside of my shoe every time I stepped on one filled me with a sense of satisfaction, knowing I was aiding in our survival in a small way. I made my way to the end of the garden when I noticed the rabbit cage. Mom had kept several she'd caught in traps to breed for meat. She told me not to get attached to any of them, as we'd be eating them all at some point. But of course, I'd given them all names and loved sticking my fingers in the cage to feel their soft fur. One of the females, whom I'd named Daisy after a character in one of my mom's books, was staring at me. She chewed on whatever vegetation she had in her mouth as I approached. She didn't scurry or hide like all the others in the cage. Instead, continuing to look at me in the eyes. The curious way she watched me made me smile under my mask. We looked at each other for a while before I got the sudden urge to untie the twine from my neck. It fell to the ground, and I slowly pulled the mask away from my face. Daisy continued staring as I moved my bare face closer to hers. A warmth fell over me as she stared. The feeling of having someone, even a small-minded creature like a rabbit, see my real face was almost euphoric. The rabbit didn't cower as I thought it might upon seeing my face. The way my mom pushed to keep my face hidden made me think there was something horrible about it. But if there was, Daisy didn't care. She didn't look at me any differently than she might my mom or one of the other rabbits. It made me smile brighter than I ever had.
"Nestor,"
called my mom from around the corner. I struggled to grab my mask from the ground and threw it back on my face, but it was too late. Mom grabbed me by the shoulder while staring at the sky and smacked the back of my head hard enough to make my vision blur.
"Put your mask back on right now,"
she cried. I did as she asked, and she pulled me away from the scene, leaving Daisy still staring in the spot where I'd been standing. We had Daisy for dinner that night. Mom didn't have to tell me, as I'd seen her take Daisy from the cage from my bedroom window. I listened to her frantic squeaks before Mom likely broke her neck, as was her common method for killing our dinner. Daisy lay in a charred pile in the center of the table that night. Mom pulled off one of her legs and threw it on my plate.
"Eat,"
she said. Tears soaked the inside of my mask as I pulled down the mouth hole a bit, so it sat as close to my mouth as I could get it. I picked up Daisy's leg and brought it to my lips.
"Eat,"
she yelled. I took a bite of the unseasoned meat and tore it away from the bone. I closed my eyes while chewing and swallowed. Mom nodded and began eating some breast meat, satisfied.
"Do you realize what could have happened if I accidentally saw you without your mask?"
she asked.
"No, you won't tell me,"
I returned defiantly. Mom paused as if trying to gather her thoughts. She sighed, then gave her constant answer of,
"Something bad."
I felt my mask poking at the small holes that had begun to form along the neck. I'd have a new one the first time I met another person. Like the last mask, this one was made from cloth, but it was a bit thicker, as if it were made from a thick jacket. Despite this, it breathed better, making the summer trips collecting berries a bit more bearable. I was 8 or 9 years old during one of these trips, and several yards from us, I spotted a bush covered in red berries. We avoided the green berries, and most of what we ate was dark purple and bitter. However, the red ones had a sweet, tangy flavor that I still crave sometimes. I rushed over to them, carrying my basket in tow. I hadn't gotten used to my long legs and arms from my growth spurt earlier that year, so I awkwardly flopped around before reaching the bush. As I approached, it moved a little, like something was inside. I moved closer, assuming it was a squirrel or some other small critter I could easily fight off. A mop of blonde hair poked out from the side of the bush. I rounded it to see the back of a kid. They turned as soon as I approached, and I was met with a blue-eyed, skinny, blonde girl. She was around my age. Her hair fell past her shoulders, and it was full of leaves. The dirt stains on her clothes and scratches across her bare legs told me she's been in the woods for a while.
"Hi,"
the girl said with a bright smile. I backed away a bit.
"Why are you wearing a mask? Are you a superhero?"
she asked with a mocking laugh.
"Superhero?"
I asked.
"Yeah,"
she returned before reaching into her back pocket and pulling out a rolled comic book. She handed it to me.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
And I saw Spider-Man written on the front. It was the first time I'd ever seen anyone else in a mask, though his was a lot cooler than mine.
"You should wear one like him instead,"
the girl said. The sound of leaves crunching sounded behind me, and I saw my mom approach with her bow and arrow. Her eyes widened when she noticed the girl.
"Hello,"
the girl said. I watched my mother's hands shake as she held the bow and arrow tightly against her side. Another sound came from behind the girl, and Mom quickly lifted the weapon. It was a man with a large brown beard. He spotted my mom instantly and threw his hands up in submission while slowly moving in front of the girl.
"Who are you?"
Mom asked.
Hello, he said. "I'm Monty. This is my daughter, Jamie. We're camping nearby. Sorry, I didn't know we were on someone's property."
Mom refused to lower the bow and arrow,
You need to leave.
Is this your property? The man asked. Mom bit her lip, and her arms started to shake.
Yes,
she said. Would the park office confirm that if I called? He asked. Mom lowered the bow a little. Jamie, why don't you go find some firewood? He said.
But, Dad...
Go! Jamie pursed her lips and glanced at me before stomping away. Look, if you're this deep in the woods, I assume you're hiding from something just like we are. He said to my mom before looking at me and raising his eyebrow. We don't want any trouble, and I don't care what you're doing out here, honestly.
See that tree?
Mom said, pointing to the tallest one in the area.
Don't cross it again. You or your girl.
You got it, Monty said with a smile. And with that, my mom lowered her weapon. I was just bluffing, by the way. I ain't got a phone. Too easy to track. Mom grabbed me by the arm and pulled as we started walking back home. If you ever want to trade some of your kills, let me know, he said. We got plenty of beans and rice. Mom ignored him. We're in the RV down the trail about 2 miles, he called. I looked back and saw the girl waving. I didn't stop looking until they disappeared in the distance. I helped Mom gut the rabbit she'd caught for dinner, holding the bag for the innards as she ripped them out of the small creature. She hadn't said much since we met the father and daughter in the woods, and I couldn't tell if she was concerned or mad. I knew I should avoid bringing it up, but couldn't help myself.
I thought you said there was no one else in these woods, I said,
as she placed a handful of viscera into the bag.
There weren't, she said, and I need to figure out a way to get rid of them.
Why? I asked.
They didn't seem dangerous.
She paused.
Everyone's dangerous, Nestor.
I dropped my head and stared into the bag for a while, not meaning to. My eyes got lost in the red and pink mixture that slid with every slight movement. The image of the girl popped into my head and wouldn't seem to leave.
You're thinking about her, aren't you?
Mom asked. Over time, I've learned many moms have the ability to predict exactly what their child is thinking, or at least offer a good guess.
She was around your age.
I looked at my mom, then back into the bag. She dropped the rabbit onto the wood slab and knelt in front of me.
I know you're lonely, but you know it has to be this way, she said.
But why? I asked. You never tell me.
I tell you that you need to trust me,
she said before standing back up.
And that should be the only explanation you need.
It wasn't, though. I don't know if it was the fact that my mind was changing in adolescence or I'd finally had enough, but I'd already started thinking of ways I could sneak away and meet that girl again.
I know what'll make you feel better,
Mom said before taking off her blood-stained gloves and going inside. She came back out a few minutes later, holding something behind her back. She stopped in front of me, and my hands started to shake with excitement. I'd never gotten a gift before, and never expected one. The feeling of excitement was something I hadn't had much experience with. She paused for a few more moments as I felt I was about to burst. She finally revealed what looked like a light brown mass, the color of a dying tree. She smiled as she handed it to me. It felt smooth and almost sticky. I pulled the edges apart to see that it was a new mask, but it was nothing like the ones I'd had before. This one had actual facial features, a mouth with lips, a nose like my mom's, and eyebrows.
I made it with rabbit skin, she said. I thought you'd like having one that looks like an actual face.
I stared at it, trying to appear grateful, but struggling to understand how I actually felt.
Well, try it on, she said.
I did as she asked, pulling the thin leather across my head, into my neck. It fit tightly against my head. The eye holes were perfectly situated, so I wouldn't have to pull the mask down to see.
You probably won't want to wear it in the summer, but I tried to make it more comfortable and durable than your last one.
I breathed in the gamey smell of the leather and pressed my tongue against the inside of my mouth.
Well, what do you think?
She asked.
Thanks,
I said, wishing it looked more like Spider-Man's. Mom was always exhausted after a day of hunting, especially during the summer. It was almost impossible to wake her up. Once she fell asleep, I snuck out of the cabin and into the woods. I followed the path, remembering what Monty said about their RV being 2 miles down the trail. As I walked in the darkness, I wondered why I was trying so hard to see this girl again. I'd been fine living my whole life without anyone besides Mom, though I'd begun to wonder if that feeling of complacency came from a secluded life. I'd been walking around for half an hour when I heard voices a few yards away. I ducked into the nearby trees and spotted a fire that gave way to a dingy brown RV. Monty sat in a chair beside the fire while Jamie danced around it. I moved closer without meaning to, not realizing I was no longer hidden. Jamie spotted me as she rounded the fire. I watched her say something to him before she came skipping towards me.
Hey, Spider-Man,
she said.
I like your new mask.
Thanks, I said. My name's Nestor.
I like Spider-Man better,
she said.
Come on, I told my dad I was going to pee, but I want to show you something.
She grabbed my hand and pulled me into the woods. Her hand was soft and warm, despite it being chilly that night. I still remember that. The temperature of her hand left an impression on mine that seems to remain for years. We walked a few yards more until she stopped at a small ditch with a thin stream at the bottom. She smiled at me before sliding down to the edge of the stream. I paused before following. At the bottom, she caught my arm and stopped me from going face first into the creek. She laughed, and I laughed back.
Look,
she said, pointing in the creek. I scanned the surface of the dark water, unsure of what she was pointing at.
Tadpoles,
she said with excitement. I looked again, and in the moon's reflection, I saw tiny black dots swimming near the edge of the creek.
They'll grow legs soon,
she said.
That's what I learned in school. Do you go to school?
I shook my head.
Yeah, I'm not right now, but my dad said I can go back soon, when we leave the woods.
Despite not knowing her, the thought of her leaving made my chest hurt.
Jamie!
Cried Monty from somewhere in the woods.
I gotta go,
she said softly.
Come visit me again. Just whistle 3 times and I'll come find you in the woods.
She climbed up the ditch and waved before disappearing. I only went to visit her on the nights my mom was exhausted. Sometimes, Jamie was already in bed when I arrived. We only saw each other every couple of weeks, but the times we saw each other made up for all the time away that I wanted to see her. Seeing her was like seeing sunshine after weeks of rain. On these late-night meetings, Jamie told me all about her life out of the woods, the friends she had back in her hometown, the restaurants she missed, the afternoons she spent at their local library, reading whichever book had the coolest cover.
Have you ever read The Boxcar Children?
She asked me one night. I shook my head. My mom had a small collection of books, and most were too long for me to be interested in. The only 3 I had read from her collection were one about local wildlife and an old cookbook with faded letters.
Whenever I leave, you can visit me, and I'll let you borrow it,
she said, while hitting tall blades of grass with a stick.
I have the whole collection. Oh, we can go to the movies. I love going to the movies. I used to go all the time with my mom and dad before they broke up.
Broke up? I asked.
Yeah, it's like when adults decide they don't like each other anymore, so they stop living together.
She knew so much more than me about movies, books, the world, everything.
You've really lived out here your whole life, Spider-Man?
She asked.
Yeah, I think so, I said.
That's cool. You're like this guy in this movie I liked called Tarzan, except you weren't raised by gorillas, right?
She laughed. We found a clearing and sat in the cool grass. Fireflies flew around the tall grass like embers. We looked at each other, and she smiled, and I smiled back. She picked at the grass to her side, randomly glancing at me.
Why do you wear a mask?
She asked, not looking up at me. I knew it would come up eventually. though I liked how long she'd gone before asking.
My mom says something bad will happen,
I said, wondering if I should have come up with a cooler reason. She picked at the grass for a few more seconds before standing up and dusting her hands.
Works for me,
she said, before offering her hands to help me up. And as we stood in the moonlight, I knew there was no way my face was nearly as nice as hers. We'd met each other every few weeks for around a year without either of us getting caught, though I got the feeling her dad wouldn't care as much as my mom would. One night, when I came back, my mom was waiting in the yard, staring into the woods. She spotted me, and her eyes grew wide with anger.
Where the hell were you?
She cried, moving towards me like an angry bull. She grabbed me by the shoulders and tried to look in my eyes, but I refused to meet them.
Just out for a walk,
I said.
You were meeting that girl, weren't you? You know we can't trust them.
I pulled away from my mom, and she stepped back, surprised.
What's wrong with you?
She asked.
She's my friend, I said. My only friend.
I thought I was your friend, she returned, her voice dropping. I paused.
Friends don't keep secrets from each other. You don't tell me anything.
Mom looked at the ground. I could see the thoughts racing through her head. She was considering something.
Why do we have to stay here?
I asked.
Why can't I have friends? Why can't I go to school? Why do I have to wear a mask?
Mom bit her lip, and her eyes met mine. They were red and ready to break with tears. I waited for an answer, hoping she'd finally decided to share something with me. She gripped her fists, then released them. She sighed and started back to the cabin, leaving me where I was standing.
Keep playing with her if you want,
she said.
Just keep your mask on.
Another year or so passed. I was still frustrated with my mom for not sharing more information with me, but I was happy I didn't have to sneak out to meet Jamie. We even started meeting in the daylight, making it much easier to explore the woods together. I showed her all the things I'd learned over the years, about how to identify poisonous plants, how to find your way home if you got lost, and how to track animals.
Wow, you know a lot about the woods,
she said.
Why didn't you ever tell me?
I shrugged.
Will you teach me how to shoot a bow and arrow?
She asked. Mom had just taught me, so I wasn't sure how well I could teach her. However, the pleas in her eyes kept me from saying no. We found a spot near a clearing in the woods where my mom would often hunt for quails. We ducked behind a log, and I set up the bow and arrow on top of it. A small flock of quail bobbed in and out of the tall grass. I picked a large one closer to us than the rest and aimed the arrow just as Mom had taught me. The quail bobbed again, and I took a deep breath before letting the arrow go. The flock flew into the air, leaving the arrow on the ground, pointed towards the sky. We walked to the clearing and found the quail struck through its chest with the arrow.
That was amazing,
she cried.
I want to try.
It was the first animal I'd ever killed on my own, and I loved that Jamie was here to see it. It made me realize that I wanted her there for all the big moments in my life. We went back to the log with my quail and hid. An hour or so passed before the flock returned and started picking at seeds and insects on the ground. I handed Jamie the bow and arrow.
What do I do?
She asked, holding the bow and arrow at her sides.
You have to show me, silly.
I awkwardly moved towards her and placed my arms around her shoulders. I lifted her arm with the arrow, then the one with the bow. I positioned them in the right spots, slowly. Her hair smelled like sweat and dirt, but I liked it.
You have to aim and take a breath before shooting, I said. You need to make sure you're completely relaxed, and taking a breath helps.
Okay,
she said.
How far do I pull the string back?
I gulped before putting my hand over hers. She breathed quickly, as if I scared her, but quickly settled into my arms. I cupped my hand around hers and pulled the string back. She looked at me and smiled.
I think I got it,
she said. I moved away as I noticed my heart beating harder than it ever had. She aimed the arrow and took a breath. She let it go, and the flock flew away. We both watched the arrow for a moment and saw it move. We ran to it and saw the quail shot in the side. I pulled the arrow out, and the tiny bird struggled to move away from us.
"Oh, no,"
she said. I could see her starting to cry.
"It's okay,"
I said, picking up the quail and holding it between us.
"Do you think we could help?"
Before she could finish her thought, I twisted the bird's neck, and it went limp. I held it to him. I held it to her, and she stared at me, wide-eyed. I cocked my head at her, but she looked away.
"It's okay. You can keep it,"
she said. We spent the rest of that day at a clearing close to her campsite. She poked at rocks with her pocket knife and stared at the forest, not saying anything. I was about to ask her what was wrong when she dropped her head and began sobbing.
"What's wrong?"
I asked. She looks back up, then at me.
"I want to go home."
I dropped my head.
"I know my dad is hiding me from my mom,"
she said.
"He picked me up from school one day and told me we were going on a fun trip and that we'd go home soon. I believed him for a long time, but I'm not a stupid kid anymore. I miss my mom. I miss my old friends."
I know she didn't mean to make me feel bad, but hearing all this hurt. I thought she was happy out here with me, that all we needed was each other.
"I want to leave," she said. "And I want you to go with me."
I sat back.
"What? I can't leave."
She pursed her lips and set her head on her knees.
"Why do you wear that mask?"
"I have to."
"Because your mom says."
I paused, then nodded.
"Your mom's lying, just like my dad is. I bet you $1 million nothing will happen if you take off your mask right now."
She moved her hand towards me and gripped the neck of the mask. I pulled back and she let go. She paused and tried again, and this time I allowed her to untie the twine. Everything seems to move in slow motion as she gently pulled upwards on the mask, careful to avoid yanking too hard around my nose and eyes. Everything went black as the last bit of the mask traveled up my face. By then, Jamie's smiling face greeted me with the sun behind it. We stared at each other for several moments.
"See? Nothing,"
she said.
"And you don't have any hideous scars or anything, really?"
I asked. She shook her head, then leaned in, kissing me on the lips. My eyes widened in surprise for a moment, but I quickly relaxed as it felt right. Perfect. She pulled away and smiled again. My smile was so big my cheeks started to hurt.
"Let's leave. Tonight,"
she said.
"Tonight."
She nodded.
"I can grab food and stuff to last us a while, and you can use your forest knowledge to lead us back to the road. Some adults will have to pick out some kids they see on the side of the road. I'll tell them where my mom lives, and we can go back there."
"Your mom would let me stay?" I asked. She nodded.
"Of course."
She stood up and offered her hands to me. I took it and pulled myself up.
"Meet me here when the moon's in the center of the sky," she said.
A thousand thoughts went through my mind as I stood there, holding Jamie's hand. I wondered if this was really a good idea, if my mom would be okay without me, if I was ready to leave the woods. But I knew I could do all of it as long as I was with Jamie. I nodded. She started out of the clearing with me a few feet behind her. She paused, causing me to stop. She stood still for several seconds with her arms at her sides, the pocket knife in her hand, shaking.
"Jamie?"
I asked.
"Are you okay?"
She turned to me with wide eyes and her mouth clenched.
"Jamie?"
I moved towards her, but she lifted the knife. I stood, frozen, as she moved it towards her head, holding it a few inches from her cheek.
"Jake!"
She stuck the knife deep in her face, and I screamed. She pulled against the handle, dragging the blade along her face. I ran to stop her, but a kick to my stomach sent me to the ground. Jamie continued cutting her face, dragging it along her forehead and down to her ears. I leapt up to stop her again, but again and again she managed to keep me away while continuing to slice her flesh.
"Jamie!"
cried a voice from the woods. Monty distracted me for a moment as he came running into the clearing from behind me.
"I heard a scream,"
he said while approaching. I noticed the knife in Jamie's face and the blood running down her neck.
"Jamie!"
he cried. He ran quickly toward her, glancing at me along the way. He paused a few feet behind me, and I stood between the two of them as the horrible sounds of Jamie's knife still working down her face filled my ears and made my legs immobile. Monty stared blank-faced at me for a moment, then dug into his pocket without looking down. He pulled out a much larger knife than Jamie's and stuck it into his own cheek, starting to cut along the same pattern she had. I clocked the silence from behind me and turned. I didn't want to see what Jamie had done, but I couldn't stop myself. My brain wanted to leave as quickly as I could, but something buried deep told me to look. I looked upon a bloody mess of musculature. Her eyelids were still there, though she didn't blink. Her nose was gone, as were her lips, revealing two rows of small teeth. The sounds of Monty continuing to slice sounded behind me as my eyes traveled down Jamie's body. At her side, I saw what was left of her face. She lifted her arm and held it up to me. It looked like it. I wanted to scream, but couldn't. Instead, I ran. I ran as fast as I could back to the cabin, pulling my mask back over my face along the way. Mom was peeling the husks from some corn when I ran into the yard. I stumbled to the ground and she ran over. The inside of my mask was soaked with tears and I was having trouble breathing in it.
"Nesta, what's wrong?"
she asked, kneeling in front of me. Her fingers drifted to the untied twine at the bottom of my neck.
"Oh, no,"
she said.
Did she see your face?
They're still alive,"
I said.
"We could take them out of the woods."
"It's too late for them, son. I'm sorry."
I cried violently for another few moments, then looked at my mom.
"When you said something bad would happen if someone saw my face, you didn't mean something bad would happen to me, did you?"
I sat in the kitchen while Mom brought me a cool glass of water. I could tell she was stalling, but I didn't care. Everything was wrong, and nothing she said would make it better. She sat in front of me and grabbed my hand.
"I didn't want to tell you. I hoped I would never have to."
She looked from side to side, then at me.
"In the town I grew up in, this small place on the other side of the woods, there were stories of things in the forest. Things that only showed themselves when they wanted to be seen. Spirits, ghosts, monsters. Natives had a name for this particular brand of spirits that I can't remember," she continued. "Us in town always just called them face stealers."
My heart stopped beating for a moment.
"Folks said if you looked at their face, they would take yours. All us kids figured they were just stories meant to keep us from wandering too far into the woods. That's what adults do, right? Tell kids fibs to keep them from getting hurt. That's what I learned to do, Nesta. And I'm wondering if it was right. I'm wondering if I should have just told you this stuff from the beginning."
She sighed. I wanted to say something. My mind couldn't find the words.
"I went most of my life believing that there was no such thing as magic, and things were only the way you saw them,"
Mom said before pausing and looking at me.
"One day, I was walking in the woods, just trying to clear my head. I might have wandered farther than I should have, but I grew up around the trees. I knew how to find my way back. As I was fixing to turn around, I noticed a man a few yards away from me, off the trail. I didn't think nothing of it. Figured he was out hunting or something like that, but when he turns to me, his face was missing. Cut clean off. Took everything except his teeth and ears.
My hands started to shake. I didn't want to believe anything she was saying, but the image of Jamie's skinless face refused to leave my head.
I started walking backwards, thinking this man must have lost his mind, but it started to occur to me that maybe all those stories I thought were bullshit actually had some truth to them.
She looked at me, then away. It was the first time I'd ever heard her curse.
I kept moving away from the man when I saw this small body facing away from me. A few yards away, off the trail, a kid, no older than 2 or 3, completely naked in the woods, by themselves. I walked towards them, thinking they might be in danger from the man. Then, I saw it. A clump of skin on the ground, in a pile, like some fucked up anthill. The holes for his eyes were the only thing I saw, before turning away. I didn't know what to do. I thought about just leaving you out there. But then, you started crying. A painful cry that broke my heart. I couldn't have kids of my own, but...
She swallowed her saliva.
I wrapped my outside shirt over your head and picked you up. And when you wrapped your tiny arms around my neck, I knew I had to protect you. So I just kept walking deeper and deeper into the woods, not knowing what to do, but hoping I'd figure it out along the way.
She answered the first question I had without me having to say anything.
I don't know who left you there or why,
she said.
I wonder if your real parents would ever come looking for you. And maybe that's partially why I wanted us to stay as hidden as we could.
Her eyes drifted to me. There was a long, heavy silence.
Esther,
she said.
I don't want to ask, son, but I think I have to. When your friend did what she did you like it?
Of course I didn't like it, I thought, as I wandered back through the woods. I didn't have time to examine my emotions at the moment, though. I thought I was terrified. But had I confused excitement for terror? The sun was beginning to set when I made it to the spot where Jamie and Monty lay. They were both on their backs, their bodies still against the bright green grass. I warily approached, not wanting to see what had become of their faces, but unable to stop myself. I stopped just shy of their bodies and noticed something on the ground. A small mound of pink flesh stared back at me, and I knew it was her face. I didn't move for a few moments. My stomach turned at the idea of what her face might look like detached from her body. Still, I moved towards it, seeing a few insects had begun picking away at the flesh. I picked it up, dusting the small creatures away while feeling the softness of the flesh between my fingers. As the stinky blood coated my palms, I felt the side of my mouth begin to curl into a smile. I gasped and dropped Jamie's face before running away from the scene, wiping the blood from my hands onto my pants. I sat in my room, staring at the wall for a long time. My body still buzzed from the feeling of Jamie's face between my fingers. The fear and sickness had all disappeared, instead replaced with an elation I'd never experienced. My body felt light, and the constant fear and anxiety that usually filled my brain had gone away. I felt confident and more intelligent, though it seemed impossible at the time. I sat with the feeling, not wanting it to leave. However, when it did, I felt worse than I ever had. A dark cloud seemed to surround my head as my body felt heavy and bound to the space around me. The realization that I would never see my best friend again came rushing into me, and as the guilt of knowing I had caused her death made me wish I were the one lying lifeless in the grass instead of her.
I cried for the next few hours, until it felt like I had no tears left. My mom had come by to check on me several times, but avoided coming into my room.
"Just let me know if you need something, okay?"
she asked once. I heard her move to her room and shut the door. She never closed her room at nights before that day. I could tell there was something different about her, and it had become more evident over the next few days. She no longer walked around the house like an authority figure, but more like someone trying to avoid eye contact with a mean dog. She never brought up the incident again, and I was thankful for that. The guilt of killing Jamie never went away, though neither did the remembrance of that ecstasy I experienced afterwards. It created a temptation in me to go out and find someone else to whom I could show my face. It became a regular craving. Usually, it was more like one might crave sugar after going a long time without any. But some nights, it was almost compared to starvation. It became so bad that one day, I saw my mom walking outside, busy and distracted with chores. I approached from behind and started removing my mask without thinking. My mom heard me and approached and spun around, dropping the garden hose she'd been using. The look of fear in her face. The woman who'd ensured my survival, who'd loved me despite knowing I was a monster. Seeing her that terrified of me. It almost hurt worse than Jamie. Mom slept with a chair against her door that night, and for most nights after. While she was sleeping one night, I snuck into her craft room, spotting a large needle she used on leather. I grabbed it, taking a thick roll of twine as well. Jamie's face flashed in my mind. First, her face the first time I'd met her, followed by the last time. I knew it was horrible, but my emotions and my brain weren't matching. And at the time, I felt like my brain was right. If the cravings weren't going to stop, then I needed to prevent my mask from ever coming off again. I took the needle and twine and held them to my neck for a moment before taking a deep breath. The needle punctured my skin, then the mask leather. I cringed as the twine slid through my flesh and felt every centimeter of its rough edges scraping the inside of my skin. Lines of crimson fell from every puncture in my neck. The harsh stinging I'd felt when I first punctured my skin had become a dull pain. For the first time in my life, the mask felt warm and comforting. I breathed in its leathery smell before lying back on my bed, thankful I'd never hurt anyone like I'd hurt Jamie. My bed is much more comfortable these days. I invested in a weighted blanket and a goose down pillow, and I truly can tell the difference. In the month, it'll be 10 years since I left the woods. Mom died a year prior, and being out there by myself, well, it was lonelier than I can describe. Though on some nights, I would give a lot of money for the peace and quiet of the woods. My apartment overlooks a bustling downtown area, and while the view is amazing, the noise of the city can be a bit overwhelming at times. Thank God for the noise-canceling headphones my ex-girlfriend gifted me for Christmas last year. Though it's my day off, I decided to do some cleaning. I never got around to hiring a new cleaner, and the place had become a bit of a sty. I go to the bathroom and look in the mirror for a moment, seeing my neck mask staring back at me. It's more lucid than any of the masks I had growing up, but thick enough to prevent me from seeing my actual face. This mask is milky white and made of a thin plastic. It only covers my face, leaving my hair, ears, and neck visible. The scars where I'd sewn that old mask on became a pale white over the years. No one ever asked about them, though. There were only a few people who'd ever seen me with my shirt off. Lining the bathroom counter are several other masks, ones I made myself from materials I've collected over the years. I've been perfecting them since leaving the woods. I was able to get away with crude masks for a while, using the excuse of having bad scarring, but I realized how much better it was to get close to someone before doing what I had to do. Those people want something they can see. Eyes that react to them. Lips that move. Cheeks that wrinkle when smiling. I think I've almost got my perfect mask. A contour to every crease of my face and match my skin color perfectly. Only sometimes will someone notice something off about my face. Maybe they spot a plasticky sheen to the synthetic skin or see makeup lines around my lips or eyes. They only make a look of concern and continue about their day, wondering if what they saw was only their imagination. I decide to clean my room first, starting with the mess of clothes in the closet. Before getting started, though, I decide to reminisce and drag out the leather box near the back corner of the closet. I place it on my bed and pull the flap open. A smile climbs up my cheeks. I've managed to preserve most of them, with the latest ones being those of my ex-girlfriend and the cleaners. There are 23 in total, but I have plans for several more, so I'm probably going to need to find a better storage system. Seeing all the empty eye sockets and jagged edges of the faces always makes me feel a slight amount of elation I feel upon taking them. It also makes me sad, though. Sad that I didn't go back for her face before the forest took it.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.